All right, folks, what an episode we have for you today. It's another edition of our popular series, Bad Book Club, and this week we're talking about Ernest Cline's Ready Player One. We originally did this as a live stream, so what you're hearing is that. It was pretty long, because we have a lot to say about this book, so we're going to do part one this week, and then the second part of the stream will come out next week. So this is another two-part Bad Book Club. We had a lot of fun talking about this book. If you want to read it, I recommend you do that before you listen to the episode. And if you don't, you'll still enjoy this no matter what. So anyway, have a great time. Go to patreon.com/latenight to see the video version of this, our live stream, which is now no longer live, and enjoy the show. And we're live. Oh, background. There we go.
Wow. We are live.
Hi.
Hi, Brian. Look at us in our matching Hawaiian shirts, which we didn't coordinate.
Nope. We are, I believe the name of the shade, the Pantone name, is Cline Orange.
Indeed. Yes. I do not own an orange Hawaiian shirt like you do, but I was able to do my makeup in homage to the great writer of our time.
Get real close to the camera so we can admire your eye work there. There it is. Look at that. Incredible.
Yeah. That was really helpful. That was full makeup YouTuber. That was just like pitch perfect. Mm-hmm. I feel like I should be up here, but I think the book sucked.
Sucked the life out of you?
Yeah, I think it has.
Should I drop down?
This is what happens when you have real gamer posture.
No, I'm not gonna let some Gen Z upstart make me slouch.
Don't catch him slouching, anybody. All right, no. Are we gonna start this thing?
Well, do you want to introduce the stream, the show, do whatever?
I don't know
you,
at what point the stream begins and or the stream ends and the episode begins.
No, that's a good point. Well, first of all, thank you, everybody, for joining us. We have 30-ish people here today. That's great.
That's nice.
We're trying to do one of these a month, and I think we've been holding that. We've done 3 months of these, so I'm glad everybody's joining us on a lovely Sunday afternoon or evening, depending on where you are. Look at this. What is that?
Cheers. It's the exact same thing I was drinking for our... It's nasty cut water Mai Tai, if that's any indication how much I drink that I... had bought a 4-pack of them several months ago. Here we go, baby.
Yes, you've got a real problem with your cut water.
Yeah, that addiction. Water's getting cut. Hope everyone is doing great. Mm-hmm. Has anybody read Ready Player One?
Yeah, sound off, chat.
Sound
smash
off
that
in the
like
comments
button.
Below.
Yeah.
Brian, have you seen the movie? Question mark.
I did. In fact, I went to see it in the theaters because I am a glutton for punishment. And it was one of those things where I had nothing better to do. It's like a Spielberg thing. And I was like, fuck it, I'll go see it. And then I think I got out and I was like, is that as bad as I thought it was? And I saw it again and I realized, yes, it was as bad as I thought it was. Now we're going to get into this, but yeah. I was actually debating. So for the first time, since we've been doing these, you and I both finished the book, not today, not the day of the discussion,
not
but in
minutes
fact,
before recording.
Yes. So I was debating, watching the movie last night, but when I couldn't find it for free on a thing I was already paying for, I was like, I'm not fucking paying for.
I was similarly considering watching it, but. After having spent my entire fucking Saturday reading the book, I was like, nope, I am not going to do that.
Have you ever seen it or no?
No, I've seen the very loving The Shining scene out of context. And so going into the book, I was like, oh boy, I get to see that.
That is the one good scene in the movie. Honestly, that Shining scene is, I thought was like that. I was awestruck at how great that Shining thing was. The rest of the movie does not come close to being that cool.
Yeah, that's kind
Except
of what
for
I figured.
There's a really nice Mark Rylance performance in it as Halliday. But Mark Rylance is amazing, but Yeah, unfortunately, the rest of the movie is not quite as cool. It doesn't have the coherence and majesty of the book.
I'm very interested in how the movie and book diverge.
There are, I mean, honestly, they are very, very different in terms of the egg hunt. Like, most of the details are different.
Say that again?
Like, in terms of the gunt? Now, I really want to discuss my gunt on this particular episode.
Because, no one's ever shutting up about the gunt around here. It's time.
No, everyone's got their own relationship with their gunt, and as does Wade, as does Artemis.
Yeah,
you know, as does H. All of them. Yeah. So, well, I'd love to hear your take on. Layton, how is your gunt?
My gunt's suffering, bro. First of all, I guess the episode has begun. Welcome to Late Night with Brian Wecht, written by Ernest Cline,
aka Gunter HQ.
And what's your name?
My name, what's my avatar's name, or what's my name?
What's your name?
My name is Brian Wecht.
Wow. And here we are for another episode of Bad Book Club, which is a sub-episode type. Yes, our third one. We've read Angels and Demons, Breaking Dawn, and Now. So this is number three, and I'd like to say that I really pushed hard for this one.
You did.
I regret that. I had never before read Ready Player One, because I was pretty sure of what my feelings would be.
For some reason, I thought you had.
Never, for the exact reasons that my day yesterday was so shitty.
I had, because I am a proud Gen Xer. So I felt like I kind of had to. And I had friends who like raved about it. Mm-hmm. So I was like, well, I got to read this book.
Well, the pages of this book are naturally stiff and sticky from thousands of Gen Xers coming all over it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed. Layton, what's your opinion of Gen X? Like, how would you categorize us? And by us, I mean Xers.
Let's see. Unserious, boorish, prone to extending bits long past the point where they're funny. This is of all Gen Xers. I'm not being specific. Bad taste in shit that sucks. I think that is a summary of that.
Well, it's not that we have bad taste. It's just that reality bites. Gen X reference, anybody? Get ready for lots of those.
Lots of gamer references, right? That only geeks and gamers in the know will understand.
Yes, indeed. Well, where do you want to start? Maybe how about, you know, as a Gen Xer, of course, I love other people's voices. So please, why don't you regale us with, should we do some overall? We have no structure to these book clubs.
We don't.
Ever.
We just go
maybe
through
we
it.
Should. I don't know. What did you think of this book? I'm so tempted to mute you right now.
Woman's Corner? Woman's Corner?
Yeah. Thumbs down. Elaborate. Overall thoughts.
In considering the other books that we've read for the Bad Book Club, Breaking Dawn was the hardest experience for me. I mean, that one was real teeth pulling. Eventually, somewhere in the third act, getting to the point where I was just skimming, trying to get to the end. Ready Player One comes in incredibly close second for me. I mean, I found this book insufferable. I was angry the entire time I was reading it. I got so angry that at a certain point I took a break and I went and I read the entirety of The Metamorphosis of Prime Intellect, which is a completely separate novella that's the superior cyberspace story, and then angrily came back and finished Ready Player One and was really angry that I was back reading that instead of Metamorphosis of Prime Intellect. And let me be clear, when I say superior cyberspace story, much like Ready Player One, Metamorphosis of Prime Intellect is also display of authors' barely disguised fetishes. And yet, it's compelling, and I love it, and I reread it often. It does interesting things with themes and characters, which Ready Player One does not do. I think Ready Player One is emblematic of a horrible strain of 2010s geekery. Like, it feels like an egregore of this, like, gamer self-importance, and how the pinnacle of, like having the opportunity of, like, oh man, my knowledge of obscure video games is gonna win me the girl and make me rich, and everyone's gonna clap when I say things because I'm so smart and I know all of the entire dialogue to Monty Python and the Holy Grail. This book manages to make shit that I like insufferable. So yeah, that's a top level.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think?
Yeah, I was waiting for that. Great. Thank you for asking. So I for me, this is, of the books we've read, by far the one I had the easiest time reading.
It's insane.
I would not call it a good book. Definitely not. But for me, this was fast. And it was pretty fun. I don't actually disagree with anything you said, but I like it. To me, here's the difference between this and Angels and Demons. Angels and Demons also made me upset because I knew he was getting basic shit wrong that he should have fucking checked. I don't think that's the case here. Like, here, well, it's hard to get things wrong when you're just like listing things. So,
yeah, this book is basically a BuzzFeed listicle.
Kind of, yeah. But that said, you know, here's the thing about this book, as I texted you, it is like fucking laser targeted at a person of my demographic. Like, so many of these things are exactly the shit I grew up with. And for someone who's maybe 5 years older than me, it's like dead on. But for me, it's like 95% on. You know, I was born in 1975. My first gaming system was an Atari 2600, which I got, you know, roughly when it came out. Space Invade, like all that shit. Boom. Right the fuck there. Zork. I was obsessed with Zork as a kid. All the Infocom text adventure games were like my thing. So the fact that there's a Zork thing, even though it's silly and glib, is like, oh, that's cool. There is a thing. I mean, one thing that's nice to see in this book is, like, it pleases me to see pretty niche 80s gamer shit be massively popular, even if it's through the guise of this book. Like, sure. Zork was big at the time. I doubt, you know, I don't know what the cultural reach of Zork is anymore, but to see a main portion of this book be inside the game Zork, to me, that's pretty fucking cool, even if it's poorly written and kind of stupid.
Yeah, it's like when a dog sees another dog on TV.
Yeah, but this dog is like a gaming dog and is also just kind of Gen X'd out.
See, I texted that same thing to you yesterday, and your response over text was a lot funnier.
Yeah, well, I didn't want to repeat myself because I would never want to overextend a bit. Yeah, so I look, this, I agree with you. This is a poorly written book. It has zero development in character whatsoever, and the characters pretty much all suck. They're all facades.
They are all Ernest Cline.
Yes, but I had a good time reading it, and I thought it was fun. And I would read this. I would pick this over Angels and Demons any day of the week, like hands down, no contest for me.
I think, and I'm really trying to not let nostalgia cloud my view of Angels and Demons, which is entirely what Ernest Cline's MO was here, is to uncritically just fucking self-suck himself into nostalgic bliss. But Angels and Demons at least pretends to be for adults. Like, Dan Brown gets everything wrong. Langdon is insufferable. It's like the erudition porn, as is like pretty much explicitly called out in Angels and Demons. But at least it's like, aha, a story with like some themes, even if they suck. And this book just Ready Player One just revels in being juvenile, never developing, and everything that you loved as a kid is actually better than the shitty real world, in fact.
I totally agree. A big difference, Angels and Demons at least has something going on below the surface. This book has nothing going on below the surface whatsoever. Like, yeah, it is purely the text on the page.
Other than Ernest Cline's hand down his shorts.
Yeah, absolutely. As I texted you, I hope he realizes that he the fact that the main theme of the book is a Gen X dude ramming his favorite pop culture down other people's throats. Like, that's the whole thing of the book. I hope he realizes that is exactly what he is doing with this book. And I'm not going to opine on whether he does or not, but I think that's very funny that the whole MacGuffin of this book is some guy who's like, you better like my shit or you're dumb or you won't be a multi-billionaire. Well, clean.
And even the narrative backs up, it's good and important. It's not useless that I love all this shit and I'm going to subject you to it. It actually makes you the most specialist boy in the universe if you know all of the words to the massively popular movie Monty Python and the Holy Grail. Bitch, I fucking love that movie. I was obsessed with that movie as a kid. Are you kidding me? Part of the climax, spoilers for Ready Player One. Part of the climax is, oh, he's going to go through the entire movie. And this is after earlier in the book where we've always shot our load early with, oh, it's War Games, but he's playing as the main character in this like video game movie simulation. And he loses points if he doesn't say the dialogue perfectly. And he gets extra points if he says it with the proper accent and inflection. We bring that back for like the penultimate task, and it's Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
Yes. No.
I never want to watch that movie again after this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is extremely dumb how every single challenge this protagonist is exactly right for at the time. He can play the perfect game of Pac-Man, right? He can play.
He's good at everything.
He can beat the Lich King at Joust.
And he's so good at Joust that he beat his best friend so bad that he won't even play with him anymore. And then everyone clapped.
Yes. Like it is very annoying and dumb. I mean, it's like, it's the worst version of a Chosen One type narrative where this person just happens to be the exact right thing for everything. Very silly and uncool.
Yeah. This is getting very far ahead, but, there's the point when they get to the crystal gate and they're about to go through, and then the chapter ends with, we're about to step through the gate, and then all of us
died.
And I got so excited for one page, Brian, because I was like, all right, if this guy swings and the actual prize at the end of this test was that it deletes Oasis, I will respect the shit out of this. And I love it, actually. And to be fair, that's Metamorphosis of Prime Intellect brain going there, because that is essentially what that story does. No, he played a perfect game of Pac-Man, remember? So he got an extra life and it's fine.
Well, although he might delete the Oasis, I think that's left a little ambiguous at the end. But no, they do not actually
kill the Oasis. I don't think
it is,
especially because there's a fucking sequel that takes place in the Oasis.
Well, yeah, that came out later. But I think at the end, he's given the power to delete the Oasis, right? Yes, I
but that means nothing.
That means nothing.
Halliday is like, hey, remember that in the real world, the real world is the only one where you can be really happy. That falls completely fucking flat after this entire
because
book.
It's totally untrue for this kid.
Yeah, so he gets to hold hands with a girl. That's that's going to change his entire
dick. Before I forget, it reminds me of I have to find this. I used to have this book. It's called like the Big Book of American Humor or something. It was like an anthology book, big yellow book. And it had a really funny piece called like Tips for Writers or something. And one of the tips was, if you don't know how to end your book, just go with, and then everybody got run over by a truck. Now, this falls flat if you're writing a story about trucks, in which case you need to have everybody get run over by a monster truck. And there's a bunch of other fun. Oh, and also, you know, and never forget in your back pocket is always, and then they woke up. It was all a dream. It's very, very, very funny. Yes. So anyway, yeah, and everyone died. Again, the book ain't smart. The book is a collection of references. And one thing, so just being of the age and inclination that I am, I probably picked up on the references that weren't called out a bit more than you did. And there are a lot of them. Like, a lot. Some of them are obvious. Some of them are less so. And I doubt I picked up on all of them. But he actually throws in a lot of... Okay, so one stupid one is that Nolan Sorrento, first of all, Nolan, like Nolan Bushnell, founder of Atari, Nolan Sorrento's prisoner, or not prisoner number, IOI number is 655321, right? Mm-hmm. Which is from A Clockwork Orange. 655321 is, I believe, Alex's prisoner number. Stuff like this.
Oh.
He writes this down. He doesn't say it. What else? I highlighted a few of these.
That blows. That makes me hate him more.
Well, what I found interesting is that the references are not... There were some that felt to me out of Gen X. Like, if he had landed squarely in Gen X as just a thing, maybe that's a little better. But he really was kind of all over the map in a way I thought felt incoherent at times. Let's see. Can I find? Oh, well, I could go through all these. Maybe we should just go through our notes here. I'm trying to find one.
We
here.
Should do that.
Oh, but... Joe's Garage. He mentions Joe's Garage at one point, which is a Zappa album, actually a pretty good Zappa album.
Wow, fucking cool.
Mentions Crom, which is I think from Conan. Stuff like this. There's a lot of like just throwaway references, which are references to
other
things.
So you're saying that if you're just like Wade Watts and you can pick up on these implicit references to things from the 80s, you'll get a deeper experience and really solve the puzzle of this shit fucking book.
So the problem, this book has the same problem that nearly every book, including Angels and Demons, with a puzzle in it has, which is the puzzles fucking suck and they're dumb. The only way to solve the Halliday puzzle is like, first of all, completely implausible that nobody solved it for however many years. And then two people solve it at the same time, does not pass the sniff test independently, right? Artemis and Parsifal find the Tomb of Horrors at essentially the same time after nobody's come close for tens of years.
It was 5 years, right?
It was 5 years. No fucking way. Like that strains the bounds of credulity more than most things in this book for me.
Yeah.
So like that by itself is silly. Then they justify why like everybody's solving it at once because it gets out and blah, 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 blah. Like he at least sort of then says that, but come on. Both at the same time within days of each other? No way. Not happening.
And it's also this is the kind of thing that I don't normally like to nitpick, but I hated this shit, so I'm going to. Wade is 17? Question mark.
Oh, really? I forgot that. Oh, yeah. I guess he's in high school. Sure. Yeah.
Halliday had died 5 years prior, so that would have made him 12 when Halliday died and the hunt started.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't bother writing down the number of episodes, movies, songs, video games that he'd played in 5 years. Okay, mm-hmm. Sure. You're watching all of Family Ties every fucking day. Mm-hmm. You're also going to school.
And dealing with your aunt and
fucking sure.
Everything like that. Yeah. No, definitely the timing there is... That's interesting. I missed the 5 years thing. I thought it had been like 10 or 20 years.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I could also be wrong because I don't care.
I didn't clock this. But yes, that's a silly thing. You need like a lot more time.
Especially for him to know the words for multiple movies that he's like, I've watched this War Games 50 times because that's a virtue and makes me really cool.
Yes.
We might as well on the first page. The first thing, I'm curious what the first thing you highlighted in the book was.
I highlighted terrible exposition. Oasis, a massively multiplayer online game that had gradually evolved into the globally networked virtual reality most of humanity now used on a daily basis. Because here's the thing, this is something. Who was it? It was maybe Harlan Ellison pointed out about Cloverfield. It's like, who is this being written for? Who is the audience of this? He's writing his memory or something. He mentions it. This is like a book he is writing for whatever thing in the future, right? In his own future. Who's reading this? You're defining the Oasis? Everyone knows what the fucking Oasis is, bro. Like, it's completely incoherent in terms of who he is writing for.
You don't want him to spend like 50 pages explaining the basics of what a virtual reality world would be like.
Yeah.
As right. if we don't already know from the first page that it's virtual reality. Yeah, do you need to know how he walks through the hallways of his school on the school planet where he goes to school and then he gets bullied in the hallway, which is still in virtual? My first highlight was the paragraph after that one. Mm-hmm. At first, I couldn't understand why the media was making such a big deal of the billionaire's death. After all, the people of planet Earth had other concerns. The ongoing energy crisis, catastrophic climate change, widespread famine, poverty, and disease, half a dozen wars, you know, dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria.
I highlighted this too. What's that a reference to, Layton? What's that from?
What a clever little reference.
What's it? But do you get it? I don't think you get it.
Busta makes me feel good, bro.
Well, me too, but I can't. I'm on a stream right now.
That clearly didn't stop Wade Watts.
Yeah, no. Oh, well, we're going to get to that because that is indisputably the worst part of the book. Exactly. That terrible, like, you know, 11-year-old style dystopia for sure.
Who's he writing this for?
It's dumb.
It reminds me. Like, and I had this feeling, and maybe part of this is that I read the entire book in this voice that fits what I'm about to say, is that it feels like a fourth grader's creative writing project. It's like, and then I got my big swords and I got on a dinosaur and I ran super fast and everybody thought that I was the coolest guy in school. And my girlfriend who lives in Canada was there too. And my uncle works at Nintendo.
Right.
That's how
That's
the entire book feels.
I like that voice. Yeah.
Thank you. Yes, you'll be hearing
it
more later.
I totally agree with you. Yeah.
It's...
Or you know what else I liked? There's a passing or another major city vanishing in a mushroom cloud. It's like, wait, there's been nuclear... We done did a nuclear war? Is that... am I reading that right?
We did a heckin' thing.
Yeah.
There's like a terminal lack of empathy on the part of the characters in this book in a way is like,
no, that's 100%
not
right.
Explored.
They're not characters. No.
And we'll get there, but the completely nonplussed reaction to this trailer is getting blown up. It's like,
yeah,
wow.
He's just moving on. Back to the Oasis.
Good thing I wasn't there.
Yeah, my aunt, whatever, this lady that I went on my way to.
This harpy in a house coat. Hold on. I have to find this line how he describes his aunt. Oh, fuck. There's so much good stuff in here. Grinning maniacally, this is describing Halliday's tape. Grinning maniacally, he spins in rapid circles, swinging his arms and head in time with the song, flawlessly cycling through several signature 80s dance moves. But Halliday has no dance partner. He is, as the saying goes, dancing with himself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as the saying goes.
Also, we need to get this out of the way really quickly. The hunt to find the Easter egg that will bestow upon the gamer who finds it billions of dollars in ownership of Oasis. The MacGuffin is an Easter egg. And at first, this is me reading the book. At first, these individuals were known simply as egg hunters, but this was quickly truncated to the nickname Gunters.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Ernest, buddy, do you want to... Do you want to come up with another one? Do you want to come up with literally anything else?
Well, here's my question about that. Definitely it's supposed to be Gunter's. However, Gunter is an actual name. So I can't look at this.
You know Ernest Cline is not on that level.
Right? Like, it's just a bunch of German guys. You know,
no, I'm reading it and I'm like, yep, all the Gunters are going against the Sixers, a.k.a. the Sucksors, because
they suck.
That's a fucking direct quote.
Yes.
So yeah, Gunters, gunting everywhere, a real game.
Oh, so much gunting.
Game.
Yeah, there's a lot of gunting.
Game you next Tuesdays.
Gunt you.
Serving gunt. Oh man, I wish we could.
That's very good. That's very good, Layton.
I wish we could call this episode Serving Gunt.
We might be able to. I think we should.
Yeah. But yeah, you didn't have to make the MacGuffin called an Easter egg. You can name it something else and then not make the word that you're going to use like 400 times. Actually, I want to know because I can search on my Kindle.
See,
I'm going to search for the word Gunter.
I think this is interesting because to me that smacks of he's like, when is this book from? What year? It's
2011 or 2010.
Yeah, I was going to say 15-ish years old. Easter was, when this was written, was Easter egg that, I mean, it wasn't as known as it is now, right? So I think maybe the Easter egg thing read a little more niche and less stupid than it does currently. And everybody knows what that is.
I will give this book some credit for when this came out. This was very zeitgeisty because I can think of a bunch of things that came out around that time in a similar vein that now feel so horrendously dated. Mm-hmm. And it's like, this is where internet humor was at the time. Like if you were a gamer geek Gen X person or younger getting the trickle down on the internet, like, yeah, quoting Monty Python and the Holy Grail was like the coolest shit you could do on a forum post.
Although even if this is 2010, even by then it was like,
it was a little played out, but in terms of a mainstream sense, for it to have gotten to the mainstream, I mean, like, yeah, it was old by then already, but
I mean, I would say the quoting Python shit was old in the late 90s, you know, like maybe even before then.
Do you want to guess how many times the word Gunter is used in this book?
Oh, I do.
Chat, this goes for you as well.
I'm gonna say 200.
Lower.
One.
You got it, actually.
Yeah. 100.
Higher.
150.
Higher.
100. Just tell me the answer. I'm not going to keep guessing.
It's 188. You were close with 200.
Okay. Well, come on. I basically got it.
Hey, that's not going to fly in James Halliday's puzzle world.
No, that's right.
This is the thing that I was thinking of when I was reading it. I was thinking of your thoughts on puzzles and books of like either them being astronomically stupid or just unsolvable. And I love, no one can figure out the limerick where a Tomb of Horrors is referenced.
Right. For
you know,
years.
One of the most popular Dungeons and Dragons. I know that. I don't know shit about Dungeons and Dragons. That's like one of the most popular things. That's one of the ones. Nobody figured that out. None of us figured that out. Or the whole planet.
Absolutely dumb. Yes, 100%. The puzzle, I hated the puzzles. In this book.
Because they're not puzzles. It's like solve a bad word play and then go play a cabinet, but you have to play it perfectly.
That's right. And okay, so here's the thing, and we have talked about this, but when you write a puzzle, part of good puzzle design, and by the way, this puzzle is written by the best video game designer of all time, right? The master, the guy who has written the greatest video games ever. And he's written an unbelievably shitty puzzle, which also, by the way, once you solve it, makes you in charge of the universe and a multi-billionaire. The central idea of that is phenomenally stupid because, first of all, this guy, Halliday, is also kind of disillusioned with the real world, right? He's like just in his, lair doing shit.
In goblin mode?
Yeah, definitely Gunter mode. These goblin Gunters. Everyone loves goblin, a good Gunter. I give people pointers on that, actually. How would this guy... He comes up with this thing. The first person to solve it gets the universe. How does he immediately not see that this could be phenomenally abused? He's just going to leave control of the most important thing in his life to someone that fucking solves it, some rando.
Yeah.
And not,
to the
by
most
the way,
obsessive
his best
person
friend
possible.
Who's still alive and like he just talked to.
No, see, but you can't because the dead wife of that.
Kira, named after a character from The Dark Crystal, of course.
Well, it's that movie that I like and liked when I was a kid. It's so fucking cool that you said the name from a movie that we all liked.
Yeah.
I'm going to strangle Ernest Cline. That's not legally actionable because I'm saying that I would do it in the virtual world. I would do it in the virtual world only, but in there I am strangling him and serving gun.
I liked how it was presented as a, the answer to a puzzle that the reason they had a falling out was because of this woman. It's like, it's the only thing you know about them.
Yeah.
I mean, And also it's set up to pay off later, like many things in this book. It's ridiculously set up in the beginning to be like, okay, that's going to go somewhere. Yeah.
Let's see.
What else did you highlight? Go through some other highlights here.
Yeah. Chapter 1, page 13. Gunfire wasn't uncommon in the stacks, but it still shook me up. I knew I probably wouldn't be able to fall back asleep, so I decided to kill the remaining hours until dawn by brushing up on a few coin-op classics. Galaga, Defender, Asteroids. These games were outdated digital dinosaurs that had become museum pieces long before I was born. But I was a Gunter, so I didn't think of them as quaint, low-res antiques. To me, they were hallowed artifacts, pillars of the Pantheon. When I played the classics, I did so with a determined sort of reverence.
So I thought you were talking as yourself.
No,
sorry for a second. Yeah.
I'll find another quote that Ernest Cline said.
Well, and here's the crazy part too: is that even when this was written in 2010, nobody fucking thinks that. Like, you can be like, oh, those were some cool old games, but even the most Gen X-y of Gen Xers is not going to have that opinion. Even then,
we're off to such a terrible start with this book. I mean, I wanted to go into it. As always, I try to be generous with things. I was cackling. Like, if nothing else, this book made me laugh a lot, but it wasn't like a good laugh. It was a, I can't fucking believe this shit laugh.
Yeah. Again, I'm not going to disagree that this book is very poorly written and 100% on the surface. You're completely right about this.
I like his dad got killed looting a liquor store or something.
Yeah.
But he knows that he's sorry. My mom once told me that my dad had given me an alliterative name, Wade Watts, because he thought it sounded like the secret identity of a superhero, like Peter Parker or Clark Kent. Knowing that made me think he must have been a pretty cool guy, despite how he died. And then also mentions that his mother worked in an online brothel
in a catastrophic gunting accident. Yeah. He went, look, he's not the first person who died gunting. You know what they say, get eggs or die gunting.
His mom, who's also dead, was a filthy gunter.
Thank you. I was hoping you were going to say it. Yeah, I didn't want to interrupt.
She was an escort. And then Wade now lives in the stacks with his aunt, who is introduced as follows. Within 3 pages. I was halfway through the 4th episode of my Family Ties mini marathon when the laundry room door creaked open and my Aunt Alice walked in, a malnourished harpy in a house coat, clutching a basket of dirty clothes. She looked more lucid than usual, which was bad news. She was much easier to deal with when she was high.
Mm-hmm.
Great start. We love it. We've introduced 2 women, actually 3 maybe, if they've mentioned Kira by this point.
I don't think they have, but I don't remember.
Well, one of them was a sex worker and got killed, and then his aunt is a harpy and gets killed with no consequence, and Kira, well, she got killed a long time ago, so it's no big deal.
Yeah.
What else?
Well, she
have you
died because she loved the wrong man. I highlighted.
I don't know why that got me so good.
Isn't that how it feels though? Like she picked the wrong guy, and then he was like,
"That's
100%
well, what it is."
Fuck you. Yeah, it felt very punitive. I highlighted. I don't know if this is it's not the next thing, but I really hated the. Let's see. What's the setup for this? This is on page 16. It starts, I wish someone had just told me the truth right up front as soon as I was old enough to understand it. I wish someone had just said, now begins a long quoted section, which really sucks, but includes the Ricky Gervais level line, that story you heard about how we were all created by a super powerful dude named God, named God, who lives up in the sky. Total bullshit. Guess what? I'm an atheist. I was like, come on.
It's
like,
so r/atheist. It's kind of incredible. Yeah. And it's so out of nowhere, too. It's like you've done your shitty, ramshackle little exposition about this dystopia, which really hasn't established all that much other than you just telling us, like, literally a line in here is like, yeah, I didn't really like walking to school anyway, so I wouldn't be R-worded by a PDF file. That's a literal line. Like, there's just no actual anchor to the world that they exist in. And so to go on this screed about how there's no God, like, we couldn't have done that any other way.
And he goes back to it. Those stories you heard about going to a wonderful place called heaven, where there's no more pain or death and you live forever in a state of perpetual happiness. Also total bullshit. And it's like, oh, and they said just like all that God stuff. Okay.
Well, I mean,
yeah, it's real edgelord type shit and whatever.
I want to jump straight to Wade goes to school on the planet. Is Ludus a reference to something, Brian?
Not that I know. I think it's just a Latin word. I don't understand it, no.
So the school planet, it costs money/credits to teleport off of the planet where you go to school. And for some reason, instead of just like, I don't know, logging on and you have a feed of the teacher while you're in your little headset. Yeah. Beamer says it's just Latin for game.
Yeah, that's funny.
That's great, actually.
By the way, I see Beamer. I see you mentioned. I didn't call this out at the time. We are fellow Gen Xers. So any Gen X shit you want to call out, fucking do it.
So for some reason, we set up this whole thing where in virtual school, you don't just log on and watch a teacher do things like every other thing that's ever done. Like, here's virtual school. He goes to his locker. He spawns in at his locker and he's got to walk down the hallway.
This leads me to something I did want to talk about, which is the entire virtual world here makes no sense from any perspective whatsoever. Did you catch the thing where he said to walk, you use like hand gestures at some point?
When he's talking about walking or like the... What? The really expensive rigs where it's like a treadmill that like walks. We had VR in 2010, Ernest Cline.
But I was like, if you walk using your hands, which he clearly just is like a throwaway sentence to explain how you can sit down and like walk through the thing. It makes no sense because you're also using your hands for other shit. So I understand. I would have preferred he just not explain it.
The thing that got me was
to say something that feels like it can't possibly be true.
Or yeah, like I ran at X miles per hour down this thing. It's like, okay, it's one thing when you're actually playing a video game and you're like running to go do a quest or whatever. When you describe it in a book, it is so unfathomably boring. Why do you keep coming back to describing the specific thing? And the whole like it feels like he had the story problem of like, well, why can't people just fast travel to the planet that they want to go to?
Right.
Aha, they need to pay for it or travel in their spaceships. Which,
you know what?
In Firefly.
I'll take they need to pay for it. Sure. Okay. That's a fine thing. However, why would Halliday make it that way? It makes no, this is what I'm saying, is like the whole world makes no sense whatsoever.
Yeah.
But yeah,
it sounds like, you know, there's the evil band of Sixers who are the competing corporation.
Sorry,
the Sucksors.
Oh, yes. Sorry. Yes.
Who they're on this egg hunt as Gunters.
They're on this what?
Egg hunt.
Oh, Gunt. Yes. Yeah, sorry. It took me a second. Yes.
You know, there are a bunch of Gunts doing some gunting.
Just gunting around the Oasis.
It is the most like straw man, evil capitalism villain I've seen in a while. Like,
it's dumb.
It's so incredibly stupid. I don't know why I brought that up, but it's stupid. But an important thing is Ernest Cline wants us to get to know Wade Watts as a character and like what really makes him tick and what makes him our protagonist and why he's someone that we'll be interested to read about. So for some reason, he's walking through the hallways of his virtual school, which he doesn't need to do. Hey, if it isn't Wade 3, I heard a voice shout. I turned and saw Todd 13, an obnoxious avatar I recognized from my Algebra 2 class. He was standing with several of his friends. Great outfit, Slick, he said. Where did you snag the sweet threads? My avatar was wearing a black t-shirt and blue jeans, one of the free default skins you could select when you created your account. Like his Cro-Magnon friends, Todd 13 wore an expensive designer skin, probably purchased in some off-world mall. Quote, Your mom bought them for me, I retorted without breaking my stride. Tell her I said thanks.
Yeah, I noted this too.
Tell her I said thanks. The next time you stop at home to breastfeed and pick up your allowance. Childish, I know. But virtual or not, this was still high school. The more childish an insult, the more effective it was. My jab elicited laughter from a few of his friends and the other students standing nearby. And this is after a few
thank
more...
Thank your mom for all the sex.
And there are a few more paragraphs explaining how you can mute people, which it's like, if this guy is a bully to you, why is he not already muted? But then this ends with, the entire planet of Ludus was a no PvP zone, meaning that no player versus player combat was permitted. Only real gamers know this. At the school, the only real weapons were words, so I'd become skilled at wielding them.
That's great. Oh, actually, I highlighted something from this as well on page 29. What was it? Scholarship or something, full-time, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, he says, that was about as appealing as me rolling around in broken glass in my birthday suit, and I added the annotation, Family Guy. Because it feels like one of those bullshit Family Guy asides, right? That's about as appealing as me rolling around in broken glass in my birthday suit. Yeah.
Oh, I love that for you.
I highlighted Suxors. Yep.
Oh, we're looking at the same. I think we just arrived at the same thing.
Mm-hmm. I want to address some typography, which really bugged me, which is the use of video game as one word throughout this entire book. Fucking hate it. And maybe it's just how people were using the word back then, although I really don't think so. I think it's just a choice, but it is unambiguously the wrong choice. A video game. You have to say it fast when it's one word like that. Like, why are we writing it like that? Silly.
For a book that's so in love with video games and knowing things about video games, for some reason, it is written like someone who has never played a video game in their life wrote it.
Yes, and also does not acknowledge the existence of any video games after 1989, maybe. Like, there are these massive things which are vastly more interesting than any, you know, fucking cabinet game from the 80s are. And yet it's as if these never happened.
Well, right? No, Brian, it's about the calcification of the things that you liked as a child and never moving on from those things, because clearly they're superior to anything that would come after, even if the thing that you originally liked sucked and is bad.
Yeah.
All right. So as we've both arrived to this point, this is where we first hear about Deuteragonist. Question mark.
IROC.
Oh, no, I skipped over IROC. Shit. Okay, sorry.
Is IROC before this? Well, IROC might be after this. So you're talking about Artemis, though.
I'm talking about Artemis, yeah. So.
Yeah, as a woman, Layton, tell me how much you're related to Artemis, the ultimate.
Can you put me in woman's corner?
Oh, yes. Hold on.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay, I needed that. After checking a few other Gunter forums, I tapped a bookmark icon for one of my favorite websites, Artie's Missives, the blog of a female Gunter. The blog of a real gun.
For Gunter, I believe.
The blog of a female Gunter named Artthremis, parentheses, pronounced Artemis. Oh, I needed that clarification. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I discovered it about 3 years ago and had been a loyal reader ever since. She posted these great rambling essays about her search for Halliday's egg, which she called a, quote, maddening MacGuffin hunt. Hey, guys, have you ever heard the word MacGuffin? I digress. She wrote with an endearing, intelligent voice, and her entries were filled with self-deprecating humor and witty, sardonic asides. In addition to posting her often hysterical...
Oh, wait, hold on. It's like a Gen Xer.
Oh, my God.
Weird.
Yeah, people weird, being right? snarky and sarcastic on the internet? Mm. Holy shit. This girl's a real gun. I got to get through this. In addition to posting her often hysterical interpretations of passages in the almanac, she also linked the books, movies, TV shows, and music she was currently studying as a part of her Halliday research. I assumed that all of these posts were filled with misdirection and misinformation, but they were still highly entertaining. It probably goes without saying that I had a massive cyber crush on Artemis.
I highlighted cyber crush on this. Yes.
It continues. She occasionally posted screenshots of her raven-haired avatar, and I sometimes, always saved them to a folder on my hard drive. Her avatar had a pretty face, but it wasn't unnaturally perfect. In the Oasis, you got used to seeing freakishly beautiful faces on everyone, but Artemis's features didn't look as though they'd been selected from a beauty drop-down menu on some avatar creation template. Her face had the distinctive look of a real person's, as if her true features had been scanned in and mapped onto her avatar. Big hazel eyes, rounded cheekbones, a pointy chin, and a perpetual smirk. I found her unbearably attractive. Artemis's body was also somewhat unusual. Mm-hmm. In the Oasis, you usually saw one of two body shapes on female avatars, supermodel frame or the top-heavy wasp-waisted porn starlet physique, which looked even less natural in the Oasis than it did in the real world. And here's the kicker. But Artemis's frame was short and Rubenesque, all curves.
All curves.
All right, take me out of woman's corner.
All right.
Nobody puts woman in a...
I can't. It won't let me.
Nobody puts woman in a corner. I don't know if any of you got that reference.
There we go. Yes. Terrible. I completely agree.
This shit blows so hard. If Rubenesque.
Yeah.
I also hate this thing where it's like... This also feels very 2010 nerd that it's like a repudiation of anybody who's conventionally attractive, which is like fine. We've had certain beauty standards forever, but it is always like this association of like, if you're super hot, you're also a fucking idiot.
For me, it feels very self-congratulatory.
Yeah.
For Ernest Cline to be like, guess what? She's not conventionally attractive. But yeah. She's actually the hottest person in the room. So look how progressive I am with my beauty standards. Just like when, spoiler alert, H is revealed to be a black woman. To me.
And a lesbian.
It feels like there's a lot of like, guess what, Ernest Cline? You did it, buddy.
Well, no, there's literally, he pulls the like, I don't see color almost directly where it's like, I wouldn't care if she was black or red or green or purple.
Or blue like, or what? Yeah,
it's like, serious?
Yeah.
It feels,
I really don't like the sense of like, that feeling like an accomplishment, right? Yeah, totally agree.
The reveal of like, there's this whole runner about how Artemis is like really sensitive about her real life appearance and that she feels like Wade isn't going to accept her if they meet in real life. And there's like a whole bunch of drama about this. And then the reveal is that like she has a port wine like birthmark on her face.
Right.
That's it.
Yes. No, that's exactly it. Right.
Perfectly hot, except for that, which even though it's in the context of Wade being like, I think it made her even more beautiful. Mm-hmm. It's like just such a weird, like fetishy way to be like, this is the one not normal thing that is okay to be considered attractive. It's fine if the best friend who was coded as a straight white male, plot twist, it's a fat black lesbian. But then there are a million references in the book about like, oh, what if Artemis was like a fat guy in his mom's basement named Chuck?
Oh, yeah. He says
he does that like a
several
dozen
times. He says 300 pounds. He does that a lot.
So it's like clearly you do not actually feel accepting of whoever Artemis is as a personality, as you keep saying.
100%.
Because if you were, you wouldn't be saying that. Instead, oh, she has the acceptable thing that's actually kind of cool and sexy. And like she's stunned when he accepts her at the end for her horrible deformation that she dumps him over. Like, it's so fucking gross and annoying. Like, and I'm not even taking that as like a fucking moral stance, even though I could. It's just like, you lazy, transparent fuck.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I'm kind of scrolling through here. We are over an hour into this already.
Yeah, but what if this was two episodes, though, Brian?
What if it was two episodes?
What if we milked it for two episodes?
I have something in chapter six that I really want to get to.
Oh,
actually,
Brian, there is so much material here that you go straight up to it. We need to talk about IROC.
We do need to talk about
Lionel Shriver's book. We need to talk about Kevin, if anybody noticed.
Well, actually, it's funny you mention that because I want to get here's something that really bugged me also. At one point, I'm on page 61 now. This is in chapter six. I devoured each of what Halliday referred to as the Holy Trilogies, Star Wars, original and prequel trilogies in that order, Lord of the Rings, The Matrix, Mad Max, Back to the Future, and Indiana Jones. Parenthetical. Halliday once said that he preferred to pretend the other Indiana Jones films from Kingdom of the Crystal Skull onward didn't exist. And he, so one of the, of course, as you go into the future, other things happen that he didn't know about. So the fact that he calls out this one thing, acknowledging that other stuff happened in the future, is it feels incoherent to me, right? Because there are other Mad Max films, as we now know, right?
Yeah.
He didn't know that. I hate that he like called this one thing out, but didn't call the other ones out. It bothers me.
He expresses opinions about the properties that are mentioned in here, clearly defining them as this thing that rules or this thing that sucks. But it's never like an actual niche opinion.
It's always
the mainstream nerd opinion that nerds didn't shut up about for fucking ever. So it's the kind of thing where it's like, he survived a nuclear explosion by hiding in a fridge. Unlikely.
Well, I want to actually read the next paragraph, which I know you highlighted. You didn't tell me this, but you definitely did. I also absorbed the complete filmographies of each of his favorite directors: Cameron, Gilliam, Jackson, Fincher, Kubrick, Lucas, Spielberg, Del Toro, Tarantino, and of course, Kevin Smith.
Yes, of course I highlighted that.
And wrote a note. I wonder if you can see the note that I... Is this going to come across? Here. Yes, note page 62. I just wrote, for those of you not watching this. To mention, okay, these are good directors listed here. Yep. And of course, Kevin's... What?
Yeah, but think about, the year is 2010.
Yep.
And you're a nerd with bad taste, and you're very excited to talk to other nerds on the internet about the shit that you really like. This is all like...
Sorry, are you talking about the book now, or you're just talking to me?
Both, honestly, that's the thing. It's like, if I think about my friend group when I was admittedly much younger than than you would have been at this
13,
time.
You
when
were
I
13
was,
at that age.
Yeah, when I was in middle school, I was peak on this, like getting into the internet, finding a bunch of people who liked all the nerdy shit that I did, and then thinking we were like the coolest people ever because we knew all the words to the song at the end of Portal. And like, then you go back and forth in a common thread where you're like saying the lyrics at each other. That's exciting and fun when you're 13. And apparently Ernest Cline also. It's like, I see it. I see the things that are considered canon acceptable to like as a nerd. And to be a fucking housecoat wearing harpy with a drug addict boyfriend who gets killed in a stack explosion. But notice how all of those directors are only white men.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep, for sure.
Which also I kind of don't care. In the context of this book, that's maybe like the least offensive part of it. But it's still just like, interesting.
Well, because he also has an out, right? Oh, it's Halliday's favorite directors, right? Which is a stupid out, but one would get the sense that if you called him out on that, that's what he would say. But
this is once
also
again
very easy to not do that.
A thing that bothers me about the discourse around Ready Player One. This is my typical issue. All the like reevaluating it 15 years later, or whatever articles are like.
Oh, I haven't read any of these. I should.
I should. Well, so they're all like, Ready Player One is everything that's wrong with 2010 male gamer supremacy. And like, Ready Player One just doesn't hit the same after Gamergate. And like, all of them are coming at it from this like feminist lens. And God bless. God bless. However, can you shut the fuck up and just talk about all the other things about this that sucks? We don't have to make it a goddamn social movement that this book sucks bad. Like, you don't have to tie it into another big thing where we can make it like a moral crusade about how not liking Ready Player One makes you a good person. We don't have to do that with every single piece of media you don't like.
It's poorly written by any standard, not just from whatever. It's just a badly written book. It's very immaturely written.
Yes. If you hate it as much as you claim to by going on a social justice crusade about it, then talk about the other reasons why it fucking sucks shit. Can you think of what would be more harmful to a guy who obliviously writes this and then gets criticism? Talk about why it sucks. Why am I getting so heated about this? It's genuinely, it's very hot in my apartment and I'm going mildly insane.
No, I am with you. I'm in a well air-conditioned garage, so I feel the same thing.
Typical privileged male viewpoint.
White male. That reminds me of a quote I love, which I've probably said on the show many times, which is a quote from Emo Phillips, which is, why be prejudiced against someone because of their race, gender, religion, sexual orientation, you know, beliefs, etc., when there are so many real reasons to hate other people?
Yes.
There are so many real reasons to dislike this book.
Yeah, and not to say that the discussion about the myriad ways in which it's whatever, the things that I'm claiming are like getting on a moral high horse. I'm just sick
of
that being the sole extent of discourse about anything. Anyway, yeah. I'd like to get back into reading a little passage from this. So H,
oh, please.
Who is Wade's secretly fat black lesbian best friend, but who presents as a cis white male, in the game universe, they're hanging out in H's basement, which is a chat room.
Very that, cool 80s basement.
That we elaborately set up, and we need to explain what a chat room would look like in the virtual world.
I had a fake wood paneled 80s basement that I hung out and played video games in. Just in case anyone's curious. I know.
Whoa!
I'm a real Gen Xer. Yeah.
You're a real Halliday fan. So they're hanging out in the chat room, and then this guy comes in, and his name is Irock.
Irock.
But just then, a new arrival materialized on the staircase, a total lamer by the name of Irock. I let out a groan. Irock and H attended the same school and had a few classes together, but I still couldn't figure out why H had granted him access to the basement. Irock fancied himself an elite gunter, but he was nothing but an obnoxious poser. Sure, he did a lot of teleporting around the Oasis, completing quests and leveling up his avatar, but he didn't actually know anything, and he was always brandishing an oversized plasma rifle the size of a snowmobile, even in chat rooms where it was totally pointless. The guy had no sense of decorum. I lost my spot. Quote, are you cocks arguing about Star Wars again? He said. Finally, the only cool character in this book.
That's my opening line for every conversation from now on.
Are you cocks arguing about Star Wars again? He said, descending the steps and walking over to join the crowd around us. That shit is so played out, yo. Once again, this is the only cool character in this book so far. I turned to H. If you want to ban someone, why don't you start with this clown? I hit reset on the Intellivision and started another game. Shut your hole, Penisville. Irock replied.
I got to admit, I love Penisville. That's great.
I think we've somehow not mentioned really once good. That Parsable is Wade's avatar's name.
Right. Yeah, well.
Shut your hole, Penisville, Irock replied, using his favorite mispronunciation of my avatar's name. Oh my God, if he hadn't have said that, I wouldn't have realized that he was making fun of his name. Mm-hmm. He doesn't ban me because he knows I'm elite. Ain't that right, H? No, H said, rolling his eyes. That ain't right. You're about as elite as my great-grandmother, and she's dead. Screw you, H, and your dead grandma. Gee, Irock, I muttered. You always manage to elevate the intelligence level of the conversation. The whole room just lights up the moment you arrive. And then this continues. Where's the bit about everybody clapped? Because, and we had, oh, sorry, so sorry. Before this happens, Wade is talking to H, and here's the quote. A real low point in both of their careers, he said, laughing. He loved arguing about old movies even more than I did. The other gunters in the chat room were now starting to form a small crowd around us to listen in. Our arguments were often high in entertainment value. Which they're talking about Lady Hawk in War Games, which, mm-hmm. Excellent. Hold on, where's the part where everybody claps? Okay, they're arguing with Irock, and then Wade says, that's right, I called you a poser. I stood and got up in his grill. You're an ignorant know-nothing twink.
Yeah, the use of twink there, I was like, what? Insane.
You're an ignorant, know-nothing twink, which I'm incorporating into my vocabulary now. Mm-hmm. Just because you're 14th level, it doesn't make you a gunter. You actually have to possess some knowledge. Word, H said, nodding his agreement. We bumped fists. More snickering from the crowd, now directed at IROC. Blah, 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 more arguing where Wade is showing how much cooler and smarter than he is. Then this guy, he like bests him by doing gamer facts. This goes on for so long. This
forever,
is why I keep quoting.
Forever.
This scene
Absolutely.
Takes so long. And the entire point of the scene is how cool Wade is.
You know what sentence I liked from this chapter?
What?
The 80s was a long decade, 10 whole years.
Ernest.
But is
why?
That? But the question is that supposed to be funny? I don't think so. It does not read as that's supposed to be funny.
There are things in this that are clearly supposed to be jokes that are the least funny thing. And
yeah,
then he says
correct.
Stuff. And of course, Kevin Smith, which. Joke.
That is not supposed to be a joke. That is not supposed to be a joke. I don't think. I think that was real.
I took it sort of as a joke, the fact that he was separate from the bunch.
Maybe I have such a low opinion of his writing that I did not read as a joke to me.
And I have such a low opinion of Kevin Smith that I assumed that it must be a joke. But
I liked also in the chapter.
See, Brian, our arguments have a lot of entertainment value. Everyone, please clap.
Yeah, everyone clap. I burned through the entire They Might Be Giants discography in under 2 weeks. Devo took a little longer. Even in, let's say, 2010, They Might Be Giants have way more stuff than Devo. Devo didn't put out that many albums. Also, 2 weeks for an entire discography? You could listen to someone's entire discography in like a day. Right? 2 weeks? Burned through it? What are you fucking talking about? Although, but here's part of the question, right? Are you just listening to the 80s stuff? Right? Or do you like the band? Right? So this is part of the incoherence of this whole conceit. Do you like They Might Be Giants because they started in the 80s, but they only have like three albums in the 80s, maybe four? I think three. So is it only those three albums you got to worry about? Or is it like the entire discography of the band from then on?
It's also the, do you actually like any of this shit? Or do you just like it because you're told to like it and it's part of your identity that you're supposed to like it? Which is a deeper and more interesting question on this topic than Ernest Cline is exploring. He takes no care to, you know, consider that.
There's no contemporary pop culture in this world, right? Except that one fake sitcom from IOI. Right. That's the only modern pop culture that
And let me tell you
we hear about and Artemis's blog.
The only part of this book that I liked was the little 1984 section where he became an indentured servant.
That was fun. Yes, I agree.
That was the only time in the book I was like, okay, world building.
Although, how is he so good at that shit? He's like breaking into their code and hacking? Is that one? I guess he can just do everything.
He bought it from, what was the name of the stupid deep web website that he was buying stuff from? It has a really dumb name
now.
And I don't remember.
Yes, it does.
I'm not going to read this whole thing, but the conclusion of this IROC scene, the crowd burst into applause. IROC lowered his head in shame. How do you write that and not immediately go, maybe I should pick another line of work?
Mm-hmm. Is that? Yes, this is also from this chapter. How does the following limerick, I guess, scan. The copper key awaits explorers in a tomb filled with horrors, but you have much to learn. Okay, I think I finally get it, actually. But you have much to learn if you hope to earn a place among the high scorers. So, but a limerick general scansion is da 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 da
da.
Right off the bat, it's not a limerick. But you have much to learn if you hope to earn a place among the high scorers. I guess that's how the end's supposed to go, but it's not a fucking limerick. It doesn't work.
So don't call it a limerick.
The scansion is completely off, and I was like, and even if it's not off, you shouldn't have to think that hard about it. Right? Yes.
Here's another random highlight from chapter 4, parentheses. The three-dimensional map.
Four,
of,
right.
I'm just scrolling through at random. The three-dimensional map of all 27 sectors distinctly resembled an 80s puzzle toy called a Rubik's Cube. Like most Gunters, I knew this was no coincidence.
Again, who is this being written for? Because if you're living in a world where everybody is fucking obsessed with 80s pop culture, you would know this. Everybody would know this. So,
Hold on, I need to back up from the microphone real quick. We do live in the world where the world's obsessed with 80s fucking pop culture. We've been doing this shit for the past 20 years. We live in that world.
It's also safe to assume that the most famous things from a given time period are still going to be common knowledge, right? So, okay. Yeah. I think it's fair to assume people might not know what 2112 by Rush is. However, Rubik's Cube, come the fuck on. It's like one of the central things. You don't need to define it for people. Incoherent.
It is so insulting to the reader's intelligence because the writing style, the reading level is that of a fourth grader. And yet the references are shit only Gen Xers would care about. So
yes, everything about this book screams, you're smart if you know what I'm talking about.
Yes, if you can read the most basic prose that you've ever seen in your life.
But it's written for dumb people. Yes.
Yes. Here's another quote, which I only read because they bring up this point multiple times, which it's interesting if you'll notice the different phraseology that Klein brings up around certain characters multiple times. James Donovan Halliday was born on June 12th, 1972 in Middletown, Ohio. He was an only child. His father was an alcoholic machine operator and his mother
chapter?
This is, I don't know. It's page 53.
Oh, wait, I highlighted the same thing.
Chapter five. Yes. His father was an alcoholic machine operator and his mother was a bipolar waitress.
Mm-hmm.
He says the bipolar waitress thing twice. I didn't highlight the second time, I don't think, but,
yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, I highlighted the same thing. Relevant how? Yeah. Exactly.
Oh, cool guy James Halliday. Halliday had many well-known obsessions. Chief among them were classic video games, sci-fi and fantasy novels, and movies of all genres. First of all, we're at page 55. Do you think we had not already picked up on that shit? That's all you talk about. That's the entire substance of this book. You don't need to list it again. He also had an extreme fixation on the 1980s. No way! The decade during which he'd been a teenager, Halliday seemed to expect everyone around him to share his obsessions, and he often lashed out at those who didn't. He was known to fire longtime employees for not recognizing an obscure line of movie dialogue he quoted, or if he discovered they weren't familiar with one of his favorite cartoons, comic books, or video games.
It's so plausible.
I fucking hate this guy. I hate this guy.
Yeah, he sounds like a monster.
Which guy am I referring to? Wade, Halliday, Ernest Klein, all of them.
Yeah, well, they're all basically the same person.
Holy trilogies. Oh, this is chapter 6, page 63. I watched a lot of YouTube videos of cute, geeky girls playing 80s cover tunes on ukuleles. Technically, this wasn't part of my research, but I had a serious cute, geeky girls playing ukuleles fetish that I can neither explain nor defend.
So we need to define what a Rubik's Cube is, but not YouTube.
Yeah, and we never need to mention YouTube again.
That's right. Never even mentioned again. By the way, why even say fucking YouTube? Just say
videos. On Oasis.
Videos. Easy enough.
That's just a straight up author confession there.
Yeah.
The first little task that he has to do is fighting a lich king in jousting, yes. Whatever the fuck.
I liked when he said, also in chapter 6, I think, I felt like a hawk in flight, or the way I thought a shark must feel as it cruises the ocean floor.
So, oh my God, Ernest. Excellent. Writing, we're going to move you up to language studies for fifth graders. You are so smart. Gold star. When the lich is playing... The fireball in his hand vanished. He stretched out his leathery palm, which now held two shiny quarters. The games are on me, he said. He once again produced two quarters and dropped them into the joust machine. This one is for all the marbles, he said. Art thou ready?
Yeah, exactly. This lich speaks completely incoherently, mixing the like the florid, you know, kind of old school speak with the, you know, you got next game, bro, kind of stuff. Yeah.
And then, of course, this ends after Wade beats him in jousting.
On his first try, a girl couldn't do it.
Yeah, and she had been trying for 5 weeks. Mm-hmm. The chamber filled with the sound of a full orchestra. Triumphant horns were quickly joined by a stirring string section. I recognized the music. It was the last track from John Williams. It was the last track from John Williams' original Star Wars score, used in the scene where Princess Leia gives Luke and Han their medals. And once again, note the extremely popular nerd opinion that's about to be espoused here, like it's some fucking nugget of wisdom. Mm-hmm. Parentheses, and Chewbacca, as you may recall, gets the shaft. We have to explain what a Rubik's Cube is. You need to be told 20 fucking times that dude's obsessed with the 80s. I need to mention YouTube once. And the piece of music is just the fucking music from the end of Star Wars. Remember that?
Yeah.
It's the music from Star Wars.
Yeah.
Okay, yep. Thanks, Ernest. Oh, and then once you see the... I'm sorry. I feel like I'm like reading fucking everything. I was so... I'm on one today. Then Artemis comes into the chamber, and this is when we find out that she's actually found it first, and she's been trying to beat the lich at joust for weeks. And she thinks that Wade also failed. Here's her introduction. She wore a suit of scaled gunmetal blue armor that looked more sci-fi than fantasy.
Gunmetal, excuse me.
Twin blaster pistols were slung low on her hips in quick draw holsters, and there was a long curved elvish sword and a scabbard across her back. She wore fingerless road warrior style racing gloves and a pair
Can't think of that without hearing Boombox by Lonely Island.
Oh my God.
Everybody was wearing fingerless gloves.
Well, and a pair of classic Ray-Ban shades also. Overall, she seemed to be going for a sort of mid-80s post-apocalyptic steampunk girl next door look. And it was working for me in a big way. In a word, hot.
Hot. Can I jump forward slightly?
Please, please, please.
Parzival, eh? She tilted her head slightly. Named after the Knight of the Round Table who found the Grail, right? Very cool. I nodded, now even more smitten. I almost always had to explain my name to people. And Artemis was the Greek goddess of the hunt, right? Why are we explaining this shit? You don't know who Artemis is? Like, oh, Jesus Christ.
This is awesome.
The next sentence, right, but the normal spelling was already taken, so I had to use elite spelling with a number 3 in place of the E. Again, why are we explaining everything?
We already knew this from the moment that you introduced her as Artemis, pronounced Artemis. Mm-hmm. And then they're exchanging business cards.
Yep. Yes, they are.
Do you want to read what they say to each other about their business cards that ends in a certain proposal?
Yes. Let's see. This is awesome, she said. So she gets Parzival's card. This is awesome, she said, looking it over. What a wicked design. Thanks, I said, blushing under my visor. I wanted to propose marriage. I highlighted this not only because it's stupid, but also propose marriage. What's wrong with just propose? Like, it's ridiculously
proposing
clunky.
Sexual Congress.
Someday I hope to be elected to sexual Congress.
The first gunt in the White House.
Yeah, that's right. The first, Gunter president.
The
Gunter in chief.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna go for. I found the
defender in chief.
There was no hint that the stoic man in the brown leisure suit was an abusive alcoholic, that the smiling woman in the floral pantsuit was bipolar, or that the young boy in the faded asteroids t-shirt would one day create an entirely new universe. Venus says, let's see IROC's business card.
I need to take a quick break. Do you want to keep going and monologue?
I would love to monologue, actually. Brian, I could easily keep going for a lot longer.
You don't say. Uh-huh.
I'm having a great time.
Yeah, so am I. See, we don't actually disagree about this book. I just had more fun reading it.
I was worried when we were texting yesterday. I got concerned. But we could do a quick break and then come back and...
Let's do that. So we are going to go to a break here, and then we will be right back. All right? So don't...
Okay.
Hey, don't touch that dial.
That's just like what they used to say. All right.
That's fucking just like what they used to say. All right, we'll be back. Late Night is produced by Brian Wecht and Leighton Gray. Sign up for our Patreon at patreon.com/LeightonNight. Follow us on Twitter at Leighton Night, on Instagram at Leighton_night, or email us at LeightonNight@gmail.com.